Hi, I'm Sean Cassidy, and you are listening to Life Minute TV.
He first captured our hearts in the 70s as one of the decade's biggest teen idols, from his singing to his starring role in The Hardy Boys. The do run, 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 the do run, run. The son of Tony Award-winning actor Jack Cassidy, Oscar winner and everyone's favorite TV mom Shirley Jones, and half-brother to David Cassidy, major talent is in his DNA, yet he says he's more of an introvert acting as an extrovert, and has gone on working behind the scenes, writing and producing for television hits such as American Gothic, Cold Case, and New Amsterdam. Now this still boyishly handsome 66-year-old multi-talent is taking his natural-born gift of song and storytelling on the road for his first ever 50-city North American tour, The Road to Us, with a kickoff at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. I caught up with him recently to hear all about it and more. I'm Joanne Butler, and this is a Life Minute with Sean Cassidy. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
Thanks so much for joining us.
It's fun.
It's so good to see you. You look great.
Thank you. You too.
So you got a lot of big stuff happening. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
About to embark on your first national tour.
Well, it's certainly the biggest one by triple, I think. Because when I was a kid, I couldn't go out very long because I was working on a television show. So I'd go out on weekends. Or I do a couple of weeks in the summer, but this is by far the biggest commitment. It's going to be over 6 months, take me all over the country and on to Canada, and it's fun.
Why did you decide to do this?
I dipped my toe in the performing waters after not doing it for about 40 years. I stopped in 1980. I didn't know I was stopping. I did a concert at the Astrodome, 55,000 people, and I said goodnight. And I figured I'd be back on tour in a month or 6 months or whatever, but I ended up writing and I transitioned to writing and producing television. I've been fortunate to have a great run in that area for four decades. But just as the pandemic was kicking in, I had impeccable timing. I decided maybe I'll go out and tell some stories and see if anybody shows up or, you know, wants to see me. Fortunately, they did. And I sang songs that I hadn't sung in a long time. And because I haven't sung publicly for so long, my voice is still pretty strong, maybe stronger, honestly. Gratefully, people showed up. And I didn't know if they would. I didn't know if they'd care. I didn't know if I'd like it. But I had fun. And I felt like almost a calling in that because our society is so fractured now and we're so, everybody's behind a Zoom or link or on their phone or just getting people out of the house, getting people off a couch, getting them into a theater to share an experience with each other beyond the performer, beyond whomever they're going to see. Just having the experience together, the communion of a group of people is incredibly important, I think, for our mental and emotional health. If I can be a conduit in any way for that, bring it on. Our first real full show is in Maine on the 17th of September in Waterville. And we're running around New England, and then we're going to go south, and we're going to go up to the lakes and work our way in the Midwest and the Southwest and then California, and then sneak up to Canada.
So what are fans going to get? What songs are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to do all the songs that they may have bought when they were kids, all the hit songs, and there's a few of those. I'm going to do other songs that are on albums of mine, and I'm going to do some songs from my family, both my mom and dad. My father was a Broadway guy, and my mother, of course, did a lot of movie musicals, and we're going to do a little taste of that. I have a nice little section devoted to my brother David. You know, half the show is storytelling, which is my real job. I mean, I started as a performer, but I segued into writing and storytelling, which is really my passion, and I couldn't find a way to commit to going on the road again without bringing that part of my life with me, because it would have felt inauthentic, I think, just to try and replicate success I had as a kid. But this is a way of actually taking all that success and taking my recent life and melding them together. And so it feels like very authentic to who I am now. And yet it still has, I think, all of the nostalgic component that people who may have grown up with me are looking for.
And will you be playing some new material too?
I am. I've written some songs specifically for the show because the show has a narrative. It really has a beginning, middle, and end. It's not quite a Broadway show, but kind of. It's structured like one. And I had some stories that didn't have a song to support them. So I wrote two new songs. I'm actually recording those songs right now. And we're going to be putting out some new recordings, which is something I haven't done in a long time either.
Oh, wow. And I heard some family members are in the band too.
Yes, my nephew, Cole Cassidy. He's been playing guitar with me almost since the beginning of this recent return to performing. And it's really important for me to have people I really love being with on the road, because the 90 minutes you're actually doing the show is important, of course, but the other 22 and a half hours a day, you're kind of living with these people. So you want people that are fun and a joy to be with, and he certainly is.
I don't think a lot of people know that you're a writer and producer, and you've done all of these TV series, American Gothic and Cold Case and New Amsterdam and a ton more. Tell us about that.
When I was a kid acting on the Hardy Boys, I was already interested in writing, and I'd kind of fall into the writer's room and spend as much of my off time with the writers, because I found that, again, the storytelling component ended up being kind of like the magic for me of all of it. I mean, I was interested in directing and acting and singing, of course, but the idea that writers could make something up out of the air was like magic to me, literally. And I had been a magician as a kid, as a really young kid. I just thought, if I could learn that magic, that would be like a superpower, because I could like make work for people, Forget about me. Like, one of my favorite things, and I've said this before, is like one of the most incredible, most gratifying experiences of being a writer is if you could have a dream or an idea or read a newspaper story or a book or something that inspires a script. 6 months later, you show up on a set and like 300 people have a job. You had this like epiphany. And that is really like, magic in action. I just fell in love with that. Unfortunately, I was able to do it. And the minute I sold American Gothic, which was my first show, like 1994, five, I have had a show on every year or two since, and haven't stopped really. I was 5 years on New Amsterdam, a show I didn't create, but I was an executive producer and a writer on the show. And even as I was working in New Amsterdam, I started doing this live performing thing again. And I found that I not only enjoy doing both things at the same time, but I was better at time management than I'd been as a kid, because I was less stressed. Because when you write your first script, you're like, I did, that was like some weird accident that'll never happen again. Like, how could I possibly do that twice or three times? Because you think it's a fluke. Because when you're starting as a writer, you don't think you're really a writer. It's imposter syndrome, right? Everybody has it. It's like, I'm a writer now. Well, who says? Oh, I wrote this one thing. Well, good for you. Write 100 things and we'll talk. But I have written 100 things now. So I can call myself a writer, but more importantly, I can do it in a way where it is fear of not being able to do it again, or writer's block, or all the normal things that writers come up against. I don't have that anymore. I am certain that something will come. So I can commit to going on the road and doing concerts at night and sitting in my hotel room. And I do most of my writing in the morning anyway. So I'll get up at 6 o'clock, go to the gym, come back to the room, and I'll sit for 4 hours and write scenes or, outlines or whatever process, step in the process I'm in. And then I'll go off to sound check and I'll do a show and meet people that I know and love often because they come, and same thing the next day. Once in a while, I get to see my wife and my children.
How do you do it? What do you attribute it to? What's your secret?
I have a good work ethic, I think. I just love it too. I'm very fortunate. If you do what you love, you probably will be successful, but more importantly, you'll be happy. I've loved making things since I was a little boy. I would get up in the morning as a little boy in my room and I would draw a picture, or I'd build a magic trick, or let's put on a carnival. I was the kid who always had the things going on at the house on weekends, or the lemonade stand or whatever. I was entrepreneurial and I was creative. I don't know what I would be doing if I didn't do that. People say, what are your hobbies? I said, well, this is my hobby. I make stuff.
And what was it like growing up the son of two icons?
I didn't have any other frame of reference. So it was close to normal, I guess, as you can see normal as a little boy. I recognize now that it wasn't normal. I don't think I would have traded the experience. My mother and father, wildly different people, had a wildly different experience in show business in terms of how they treated it, what it meant in their lives. My father was a more traditional performer in that he clearly had a need for the attention and the validation of an audience, telling him he was wonderful. And he was wonderful. He was a great actor and really funny and charismatic guy and really complicated and ultimately not so happy. Whereas my mother had this God-given voice, this incredible voice, beautiful woman, had zero drive. And I don't say that as a diss. I just like, she was healthy. She was like, I want to live my life. And if people want to hear me sing, great, I'll sing a song. Or People want me to star in a movie, I'll do that. But then I can go up to my little cabin in the mountains and commune with nature and be with my family. Family was always really important to her, and be the small town girl she's always been. She's 91. She's the same person she was when she was 19, or probably 9. I didn't know her then. And my father had an incredible artistry and appreciation for talent. Loved writers. I suspect I'm a writer because he always told me how amazing writers were, And that slipped in somewhere. So the combo plate of the two of them, I think, was great because I feel like I kind of got the best of both of them. In terms of how it affected our lives as kids, the challenge when you're raised by artists is there's a not a lot of security financially, even though actors, they're all rich, they make lots of money. Well, sometimes they do, or they go a year without working at all, and then it's like, oh, don't leave the lights on. And then, of course, I saw my brother David go through a similar experience to my own when I was young. And having watched my dad and having watched my mom and then having watched David, when it finally happened to me, I don't think I went crazy because it was weirdly normal. Doesn't everybody have a number one record, the first record they put out when they're 18? But I'm being cavalier, but I don't mean to be. I mean to say it in a way that was like, because it wasn't a big deal in my family, it kept me like grounded, I think.
Well, it's a good thing you were talented because it made it maybe could have been the opposite.
Well, maybe. I don't know, but what's a good thing is that I survived it.
Yeah, well, you sure did. How is mom doing? She's still beautiful.
She is beautiful. She's doing great. She's
Oh, that's
she
good.
lives 5 minutes away. She was
Oh,
I don't live in Los Angeles. We moved here like 15. We live in the wine country of Santa Barbara. Mom was living in LA during the pandemic, and I didn't see much of her then. And after the pandemic, I called. I said, "Mom, we're selling the house. You're moving up here, so you're 5 minutes away from us." And she said, "Okay." And here she is, and it's great. We see her all the time, have lunch twice a week.
that's wonderful. Did you always know you wanted to follow in their footsteps, or did you always know? I mean, it sounds like you did. You always knew you were creative.
Here's the weird dichotomy with me. I'm very good at impersonating an extrovert. I'm not an extrovert, I'm an introvert. And I came from a family of people on stage, like doing stuff, and it's like, oh, I can do that. It's not really who I am, but I can kind of act that way. I honestly think if my family had not been in show business, there's no way I would have been a performer. I'd have been a writer or an architect or someone draws pictures, internal, my office, books, quiet. But because I was from a family of performers, this is me reflecting back. I wasn't thinking about this when I was 18 or 19, but so many people were saying, "You got to do it. You're a cute kid. You come from a family of actors. Surely you can act." I don't think I could act, even on the Hardy Boys. It took me a while to figure it out. I hadn't done anything, I did it honestly because I didn't want to be known as so and so's kid or so and so's brother. And it's like, all right, I'll be famous, and then maybe I won't be. And I did a good job of trying not to be for a very, very, very long time. I talk about this in my show. The only thing more ridiculous than being famous is being formally famous, because you're not really formally famous. You're still famous, except people don't really know why anymore, but you're still like recognizable. And what are you doing lately? And the best kind of fame is writer fame, because if you have, John Le Carré is your name, and you write all these bestsellers, but nobody knows what you look like. You still get a nice table at a restaurant, but you can have a private life,
Right. And you still look the same, which is amazing. You haven't changed one bit.
Well, thank
So.
you. I think I look like Sean Cassidy's father now, but thank you very much.
Well, that's not so bad. Amazing. In high school, signed a contract with Warner Brothers, did the Hardy Boys at the same time, a Broadway musical.
Yeah, that
Amazing.
was with David. That was really fun. And that was kind of out of the blue too, because this is, again, early 90s, like 93, 94. I had already kind of transitioned to writing, and I had an office at Universal, and I wasn't acting anymore. And David called me and he said, "Hey, there's this show called Blood Brothers. It's a big hit in London. They want us to star in the Broadway version and Real Brothers, and it'd be so great. And we'll be walking in our dad's footsteps." And there was all this sort of emotional pull. But I said no. I said no two or three times because I had finally like taken this big step to being perceived as a writer instead of a performer. And I was selling stuff and I was writing and they were paying me to do it. And it was like, I don't want to be Robert Goulet. I want to like be Stephen King or David Kelly or somebody. David was insistent and pushed and pushed, please come see the show, come see the show. So I flew to New York and I watched the show with him because they had the British cast over. The UK cast had brought it over, but the ticket sales weren't great. And they thought, get these American brothers in and we'll goose things up. And I have to say, the show was so emotional. And I knew that I would have a real life-enhancing experience with David. So I did it really to spend the time with him, not because I was eager to be a Broadway star, even though I had the fantastic time. And like, honestly, the only acting I think I might consider again is doing another musical on Broadway because I had so much fun. And people didn't know if I could really sing because I was a pop singer and who knows what's real and what's not. But I have a big, like old school Broadway baritone voice, and I got to sing like that every night. And that was fun too because low expectations have been my friend for a long time.
How do you hone your voice?
I have this little thing that
Uh-huh.
I, it's literally, it's like a straw. You do that, and you have, I'm advertising, Vocal Zone. Try it. It's a muscle. I lift weights. I also do vocal workout. And I think because I didn't sing professionally, publicly, night after night after night for years and years, I've managed to hang on to my voice. I'm actually a little hoarse today because I was in the recording studio very late last night and I was singing a lot. You have to rest. You have to, like, again, I did a Broadway show. When you're doing a Broadway show, you are literally living for the 2 hours you're on the stage at night, because during the day, you can't talk. You can work out, but you have to be quiet while you do it.
And no kid hungry. You're an ambassador.
Yes. No Kid Hungry. Nice segue. This is a wine called My First Crush that our family produces in concert with No Kid Hungry to benefit No Kid Hungry. We have a wonderful winemaker. Again, we live in the Santa Barbara wine country, and Steve Clifton has made a lot of extraordinary wines, makes this wine. It sells at Vega Vineyard. Mostly it sells online at myfirstcrush.com. The Santa Rita Hills in the Santa Barbara wine country are most famous for their Pinot Noir grapes. We have a very diverse climate. It can swing from like 85 degrees at noon to 45 degrees at 9 p.m. And that makes for a beautiful grape. So this has become a labor of love, and join our wine club.
Why is it called My First Crush?
There's a long story that I won't tell, but during the pandemic, when I was again just dancing around the idea of doing this show, I came up with another show to produce and create for Las Vegas called My First Crush. And I copyrighted My First Crush because Vegas basically shut down, as all the restaurants and businesses were during COVID. There was no call to do that show then. I may do it again, I don't know. But I just had this name, and Steve called me and he said, hey, I've got like 500 cases of extraordinary wine that were slated to go to all these high-end restaurants, and all the restaurants are closed. Do you know anyone that might want some wine? I said, well, I'd like it, but maybe I can help you sell it. And I said, hey, wait a second, I just copyrighted My First Crush, like trademarked. That'd be a great name for a wine. Let's put it on the wine, because he hadn't even labeled it yet. It was just out of the barrel. And I said, maybe I can sell it or help you sell it, like off my social media, and we'll build a website. And I said, I've been working with No Kid Hungry. It would be a great thing because it helps during the pandemic. Like before the pandemic, 4 out of 10 kids went to bed hungry in America. During the pandemic, it was 7. I thought, feed some kids, help our farmers, grape growers, help Steve, help No Kid Hungry, and I'll have some fun and maybe get some good wine out of it. So check, 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 check. Win, win, win.
Awesome. Who was your first crush?
Who was my first crush?
Yeah.
Little girl in second grade who sat in front of me, totally ignored me, totally ignored me. And then Julie Newmar, the original Catwoman on the Batman TV series. Oh boy. That was like holy hormones, Batman.
That's a good pick.
Yeah.
She was hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Still is hot, by the way. She's, I don't know, like my mom's age, maybe younger than my mom, but not much. I've thought a lot about this. Actually, I wrote a song called My First Crush too that I'm going to do in the show. But the crush thing is, I think it's more complicated than people give it credit for, because it tends to be thought of as like frivolous or a teenage thing. But I still have a crush on my wife, and I've been married to her over 20 years. And I get that feeling when I see her, that I can trace back to second grade or Julie Newmar, but it's the crush may go, but the feeling's timeless. I think it's got more power than people give it credit for.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I always wondered that since you were, the poster boy for a lot of women. I always wondered who was your poster girl.
But I've had others, and everybody has. I mean, you meet someone who makes your heart go. It's you can say it's a crush or whatever it is. It's an intoxication of some kind. But when you're little, and it's never happened before, it's like, what's going on? And a lot of the audience that come see me tell me I was their first record or their first concert or their first crush, no accounting for taste. And I know the feeling. I can't be cynical about it because I've had it myself, and it's the powerful drug, man.
And what's your favorite wine?
Pinot Noir is my favorite varietal. Maybe it's because I've got so much, there's so much good Pinot Noir in our valley, but I like most of them. And we have so many friends who are winemakers who make different varietals that I think developed a taste for a wide variety of them. My wife loves a sparkling wine, a white sparkling. Rosés are really fun during the summer, like barbecue. And it's funny, a lot of young people aren't drinking as much wine as my generation, or even a younger generation than me. And I think it's because this coming together, the gathering, wine is a conduit to bring people to a table. And it, I think, can open the door to not only conversation and connection, but it tells a story that you can carry with you. It has a romantic power that you can enjoy the rest of your life, the memory of it, those big events. That's why people put special wine bottles. You'll see them in their dining rooms or kitchen or whatever. It's not about alcohol. It's about the ritual of it, and it's about the tradition of it, and the fact that the stuff's alive. I mean, it was, I've had wines where the grapes were planted before I was born, and the fact that I can drink that wine and connect to a time before I was even on the planet is like magical. I'm clearly a romantic though, so.
And a magician. Favorite comfort food.
Favorite comfort. It depends on the mood, depends on, am I working out? Do I not care? Do I not care? Probably a pizza. A really nice steak is pretty awesome.
That's not so bad. That's good.
Yeah.
What was your first album?
I tell this story in my show, so I'll preview it for you. This is absolutely true. The first two albums I owned that I remember owning, that I played on my Fisher Price record player, little kid, right? Maybe 4 or 5 years old, were With the Beatles, which was the second Beatles album, and the soundtrack to The Music Man, because my mother had starred in The Music Man. The crazy thing, and I've thought about this a lot since, these two very different records, they both had the same song on them. Till There Was You, written by Meredith Willson, recorded by the Beatles, Paul McCartney singing lead on With the Beatles, and recorded by my mom, The Music Man soundtrack. And I realized that this song and these two records were kind of the intersection of everything that I followed musically since, because I have show tunes and movie music on one side, and I have pop and rock on the other. But this opened the door to soul music, which I love, to country music, because country music is storytelling, to rap. You got trouble, my friends. Trouble, right? Capital T, and it rhymes with P, and that stands for pool, and that is a rap song, right? In my like DNA. So even classical music, Meredith Willson was a classically trained composer. So all of that stuff was in those two albums and the intersection of this one song. And I think about that now, and I was like, what a gift to have b
That's so.
those entrees at that, formative age.
How old were you?
Like 4 or 5,
Oh my
and I
God.
used to listen to them all the time.
Oh.
And the Beatles obviously were a profound influence, and musicals were a profound influence. My father, lots of Broadway musicals. My mother, movie musicals. David and my mother on the Partridge Family, pop musical. Music's so important. Art's so important. So important for our, again, our soul.
Yeah, what does music do for people?
I recently went to Brian Wilson's memorial service, and I knew Brian a bit. I recorded a song that he had gifted me with, and I do it in my show. And Brian, who I do think was a genius, believed that music is the way God speaks to us.
What do you like to do when you're not working? Which is never.
Well, here's my dirty little secret. I don't view this as working. People say, "What are your hobbies?" And it's like, "What I'm doing. I like to write things, I like to sing things, I like to build things. I love architecture, and I probably would have been an architect if I weren't doing what I do, but I have drawn a lot of like drafted plans for housing and houses and home additions, and I bought and sold a lot of houses over the years and fixed them up. I really love doing that. My wife's really good at it too. I also love nature. I love to hike. I walk or hike almost every day, run, bike, have a goal. You know, I'm more in shape when I know I'm going to be performing because vanity is a very good, motivator. I don't know, you just feel better when you exercise. I don't love exercising, by the way. It's often boring, but I love how I feel after I've exercised. And walking is a really therapeutic thing for me. I know a lot of writers that walk, and I've had some of my best ideas come to me when I'm just on a walk through a wood somewhere, anywhere.
What would your current self tell your younger self?
Relax, have fun, have more fun. I was a very old soul. I felt like I was responsible for everybody when I was 18. As it turns out, I wasn't.
Why is that? Why did you feel that way?
Because I grew up with show folk, and show folk, code for show folk is crazy. So when you grow up with crazy, you either become crazy yourself or you learn how to manage crazy. And I was good at managing crazy. Also my parents were gone again, and this is not a diss on my parents. They were working a lot. So I was there as the oldest in my house with two younger brothers, feeling responsible for them and protective of them. I still feel that way. And I think that, as a kid, no kid should be burdened with that. And again, nobody imposed it on me. I did it to myself. But fortunately, I met this woman I'm married to 25 years ago who was like under the, her name in the dictionary, it says fun. Have fun. It's supposed to be fun. And if you say that to yourself enough, you start practicing it. It was not natural to me to make every situation fun, but I've taught myself, I taught myself to play the guitar. And I think, by the way, that's one of the reasons I'm on the road, going back full circle. Why would you do this again? Because when I was doing it as a kid, I was doing it because I knew how to do it and because it had happened to me. But I don't know if it's all that much fun. I was very responsible and diligent about it. Now I'm doing it for fun, and because I actually want to be connected with people. I've spent my life in rooms like this alone in a world in my brain, in my head, in my heart, creating, characters. I like to meet real people and talk to them and find out who they are. And the nature of my show is such that it's kind of interactive. It's not just me up here performing, Did I answer your question?
Yes, and then some. It's fantastic. Another similar. What's the secret to happiness in life since this is Life Minute?
Being in the moment, my mother always said that. It's hard to do. She's always been that way, though. She's that way now. My mother has never like looked back with a regret or worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. And one of the great things, I was actually on a walk yesterday reflecting on this. I'm really, really busy right now. I'm busier on paper than I've ever been in my life. I have like things going on in so many different lanes, and I have seven children. So just focusing on my kids and their lives would be enough to occupy a lot of my day. And they do occupy a lot of my day in all good ways, by the way. But the fact that I have so many things work-wise, I have three pilots I'm involved with. I've not stopped. In fact, that is blowing up now again. I've got this tour I'm going on. I'm in the recording studio. I've got this wine. I have another job I'm not even going to talk about, but it's a good job. And I have this very big family. And two boys, one returning to college, one going off to college for the first time, two girls still in high school, three adult children. But I was thinking one of the gifts of having a lot on your plate is I don't have time to worry about outcome. I don't have time to worry about, like, 2 minutes before I got on this with you, I was involved with a big thing with my son and a good thing for him, for his life. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be late. So I didn't have time to think about what am I going to say to the Life Minute? What wisdom do I have? It's just me showing up and meeting you, and it's great. It's always better because if you've tried to write the script for what's going to happen, or you're anticipating what's going to happen, you're trying to control what's going to happen, never is good. Just being there, showing up in the moment, enjoying the experience, not looking for any outcome, like just like this is the gift of it. This is the win. It's like actually an old actor trick they taught me when I was young. It's like, kids, would go and young actors go to an audition, they're all nervous because they want something. They want someone to hire them. They want someone to love them. They want someone to tell them how good they were. A director friend of mine calls it the cologne of desperation. Actor goes in, you smell it, you literally smell it, and it's off-putting. Whereas the actor that goes into the room with a gift, and I remember a director saying, "What's my gift? What's my gift?" The gift is you. You're bringing the gift of yourself into the room just to engage. That's your job. Not getting something, not getting the part. If that happens, great, that's dressing on the cake. But the gift of this experience, this exchange, this isn't psychobabble. It's actually just real, and it's very life-affirming. It's why we're here.
It's a great way to look at everything.
But it's what makes a great
True.
day. You have enough of these things, your day. It was great. Who knew what was going to happen? I met a guy on the street on the hike and I got into a chat with him and it was like illuminating. It's like, I didn't plan that.
What's something you want to do that you haven't done yet? Which is, again,
Well, I
another.
mean, I am going to put out a record and I haven't done that. I don't even know what a record is in 2025 or how you even put one out or if anybody cares about it. But I'm doing it for me because I like it and people might like it too. And if they don't, that's okay. And if they do, awesome. I'd like to do a Broadway show or write one. I've written one already. I may write another one. Theater, 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 I really love. I'm having the greatest time. My wife and I together. Here's the great thing about being married a long time to someone you're really happy with. When you have children and you watch your children go out into the world and like, I can't even, I'm getting emotional talking about it. It's the watching them blossom, literally giving them the stage. Like, I'm going to step off now. It's your turn. I hope that you got everything we could give you. I hope we throwed the football enough with you. I hope we told you enough stories. I hope we told you how great you are and that you know how proud we are of you. And now go out and make the world better. Go out and have an amazing life. And that's happening. I'm watching it with so many of my kids at different stages and it. And to share that with someone, I can't share that with anyone else. I can be proud of them with other people, my brothers and my mom, and but my wife, the woman who gave birth to these kids, to have shared the experience of watching them grow and then watching them go out into the world is just incredibly gratifying. And I didn't know that when we had them. I didn't, people talk about it, but again, I'm the luckiest man you know.
There's nothing more satisfying than that. So it's beautiful. Is there anything you could think of we didn't cover?
Want to see me juggle? No, I don't
Yes.
actually. I can't juggle. No, I can't juggle. I promise. I
About
promise.
a magic trick?
It's funny. In the first incarnation of my show, the little show I was doing when I started this a few years ago, I would go out and do a magic. I told a story. One of my first magic shows was for a little girl named Jennifer Aniston. When she was like five, I would try to replicate the magic trick. I think one of the magic tricks I did during that show in my show, and it was terrible, but. The Jennifer Aniston story was funny because years later, I'm at Warner Brothers and I'm producing a show and she's working on Friends. And they called me and they asked if they could use a poster of me for a flashback sequence in her character's college bedroom or something. And I said, sure, use my poster. And afterwards, she signed it for me. And she wrote, Dear Sean, thanks for the awesome magic show. Love Jen, which I thought was
Oh, that's
awesome.
great. Do you remember what it was? Which you don't
Well,
remember,
the trick I did on the stage was awful. I couldn't even do it anymore because it was a little like what I realized is that the reason, David Copperfield and those guys do big grand illusions is you're on a big stage and sleight of hand, which is really the masterful magic in my view, trying to do that on a stage with 1500 people in the audience is not going to land. But again, the whole thing is a magic show. I think it's all a magic show.
It's okay. Some great stories. Oh my gosh. What do you currently binge? Do you binge anything?
I have so many
Not
friends
your
that
own
make
stuff.
television shows, and I try to keep up with theirs first. My buddy Dan Fogelman has a great show called Paradise that I've been watching, and we have other writer friends that are on that show and actor friends that are on that show. And that's a terrific show. Try and keep up with all of them. I can't always watch the whole series, but I like to at least watch the pilot and get a sense of what people are connecting with. I've spent so many hours of my life in editing rooms, like cutting television shows and writing television shows and be on sets of television shows. I don't always want to watch a television show. I like going to the movies. Went and saw Superman, which I really enjoyed. Again, the movie going experience is akin to what I was talking about earlier, getting people out of our houses and into a communal space. and having the shared experience of watching something together, I think is just so important. It's getting harder and harder for theaters to survive because people aren't doing it, because you can sit and binge watch a show at home. But I hope to have more shows you can binge soon on TV. I'll
Good.
binge them beforehand in the editing room.
Well, you're amazing. You're an amazing guy. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. It was fun.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.